Welcome back, everybody. It's time to take a ride on the Pedego Podcast. Join us each week as we talk about the e-bike revolution and the entrepreneurs behind it and the love stories of those just riding along. Brought to you by Pedego Electric Bikes. Well, we've heard it all on this show so far. We've heard some amazing tales of some very passionate people who can't seem to talk enough about the joy they get, the fun they get on a Pedego podcast. Today, we're going to talk to one of the entrepreneurs behind this movement, one of the Pedego dealers, one of their top dealers, I understand. We're going to talk with John Crick from he's got a store in Arizona, and I believe it's at McDowell Mountain. Is that correct here?
Yeah, that's correct, Paul. Thanks
where,
for having me
where
on.
Is We're McDowell?
In, North Scottsdale, and the name's Pedego McDowell Mountain.
McDowell Mountain. That sounds like some magical place here or something. So you're way up at the top of the mountain there, and people have to drive all the way up the top to find you there?
Believe it or not, right on the base of it, actually. So, yeah, when you're driving in, it's hard, can't miss it. So it's pretty cool. It's really beautiful.
Well, what is really beautiful is the story you're going to tell us, if I've heard any of it correctly here. You started life not with Pedego or electric bikes in mind. Is that correct here? And you're not that far into the business world, are you? It's not like you're some. We've had so many old grizzled guys like me that this is their second or third act in life. This looks like must be one of your early acts in life here.
Yep, I was 30 years old when kind of got the ball rolling with Pedego. So definitely a youngin, I guess, considering amongst the Pedego dealers for sure. But yeah, I started off growing up super into golf. So that's kind of how my story got started.
And that's what we're going to talk about first here. So I'm a man of a certain age. We're all fascinated with golf stories here. And you grew up in Peoria, Illinois. I know it well. You know, that's the town they always made fun of. Oh, see a little play in Peoria here.
That's right.
It's like the middle of America here, or exactly. Middle America. I grew up, I went to the University of Michigan, so I'm very familiar with all that back there. And you went to the University of Illinois. We won't go into the rivalries here, but but whatever it is, you were a golf player in college and then got the good fortune to come out and play professionally for like a bunch of years.
Yeah, was really lucky. I was a good enough player, you know, good enough to at least do it for 7 years. I always get the, you know, was while I was playing, I was, people always ask, you know, how good were you, or, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
I was winning at that level. And I always tell people I was definitely good enough where I couldn't quit. I was too good to quit, but I probably couldn't get over the edge that next
well,
level.
I'm impressed because you got over the edge that most of us could never even imagine. You made the tour. The worst golfer on the tour on the best day can beat me by about a million strokes here. I mean, you know, that's like they say, the worst guy on the bench in a football team is probably the best athlete you've ever seen in your life. I mean, the competition at that level.
Fortunate enough to play on the Canadian tour. I played in a few web.com events and it was a lot of fun. It's just the game has brought me a lot, but more importantly, the game actually introduced me to Pedego. And
well, let's talk about that because you had some professional wins. It says on your resume you had, what, 12, 15 professional wins? Good enough to play, maybe frustrated because you weren't maybe in the top tier consistently?
I always fought a lot of injuries even through college. And growing up, I had a lot of back injuries and had a bad one in 2015 that was kind of tough. It was a long time away from golf. And then 2016 started having a bad hand injury, which led me to tore my UCL in my thumb, which led me to big surgery, pins in my thumb, all that fun stuff, and a long rehab, which is kind of where the story with Pedego kind of got started through that rehab process.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go into that. So now your dream is slipping away, like so many athletes. Injuries are ending your career here. And you got a rehab. You got all these problems. What did you do? Did you pick up a bike?
Yeah, it was tough because I'm a go, go, go person. I don't, you know, I'm in the morning till at night, I'm doing something, you know, whether it's active at the shop, constant. I can't sit still.
Not just laying on the couch watching TV.
So it was, injuries have been tough. And especially that one, knowing it's that, like, what am I going to do now? It's just like that question just kept going in my head. I've always been into real estate. We've kind of done that as a side, my wife and I, you know, to kind of bring in income. But that's kind of the direction I was going, and was really good friends with the Pedego La Quinta store owner. His name's Brian Newman. And he had been telling me about Pedego, because this was the end of 2016. He'd probably been telling me about Pedego for over 2 years, and I just brushed it off. Like,
come on. Cool. Yeah, that's not for me.
It's really cool you have a bike shop. Great. Have fun. it was just kind of one of those. And Brian's literally, I mean, he's one of my closest friends. I talk to him, you know, if not daily, weekly, every, you know, multiple times a week. And
he's telling you what? He's saying, no, you got to look at this. If golf is not in your future anymore,
And he was not putting any pressure on me. Like, you should do it. It was just like telling me, like, you know, doing really well. It's a lot of fun. It's just, you know, stress-free type thing. It flows really well. He's using all of his prior contacts from the golf industry.
Now, had he been in the golf, I'm sure we'll have him on sometime too, but how did you guys know each other? Did you play golf together?
We played professional golf together, and we traveled. Brian's traveled all over the world. He played on the European tour. We all kind of all over for, you know, both of us traveled on the Central America for probably 5 years together. So that's how I got to know him.
Wow.
And he, and he had stopped playing a couple of years previous to me. So that's kind of how our story.
And he's saying, man, if you're looking for something after, because that is a, let's just stop there for a second. We do a lot of shows out of the station here, and through the years met a number of professional athletes, or those who were on the on the path to be pro athletes. They either were playing at a professional level or they were close to playing at a professional level, and then an injury. And they all said the same thing. This is all they knew since they were little kids. This is all they thought about, lived, eat, breathe, slept. And all of a sudden, I remember we had one guy in here once who was a top college prospect. And he said, I was already drafted, the whole thing. I'm on my way to the big show, to the big leagues. Yeah. And he said, on just an ordinary game, I'm rounding second, and I tore something. I could feel it tear. Yeah. And he said, the minute I got up, I knew my career was over. And he said, that quickly, something I had done since I was 6 or 8 or 10 is over in a second. So that's not an easy, that's not like saying, well, okay, so you had a bunch of fun, you made a bunch of money, and now it's time to move on. It's hard to let go of that kind of passion and commitment and training and everything.
It is. And I'm too competitive of a person to stay in the industry and just kind of enjoy the sport. I need the competitive edge. Like, I can't let that go from golf. So,
again, we've been hearing that this is their last career. Hey, I had a successful career, and now I'm looking for sort of an encore career, a fun career, a lifestyle career. Although many of them have said, I started off that way, now I'm on my second or my third or my fourth store here. Yeah. Is this not just successful enough? Is this competitive enough for you? Is this got enough growth? Is this got enough to hold your attention? We got two pro golfers here, and I'm told that you're two of the top dealers that are out there. And you guys both have, again, this thing that I would think, oh, no, this is not for them.
Yeah, I mean, that's Brian and myself are both competitive against each other. I mean, we talk a lot, but it's always, he'll call me on a Saturday, you know, just sold four platforms.
Oh, what'd you do today? Yeah.
Oh, darn. We love, you know, I love that banter. I love going back and forth. I love competition. So any aspect of that, whether, and I look at it not just selling bikes, but having the best rental business, having the best well-kept store, having the best staff, like that's super important.
Having the happiest customers, having the people that want to come back to work.
All that stuff, having the best community support, like all that stuff is competition to me.
All right, so it's not for just a men of a certain age, men or women of a certain age. It can be that. It can be an encore career. It can be a fun career. It can be a rewarding career. But it can be something early in your career. I mean, you guys are pretty young. You're in your 30s now here.
Yeah.
So this is something that you're going to see and grow with, hopefully, for a long time, maybe forever, for your life.
Yeah.
Is this one store or is this multiple stores? You got this one in what area is this, kind of like North Scott? There is one in Scottsdale, and you're the other one in like North Scottsdale or something?
Correct. Yeah, it's great. We've got a great relationship. There's multiple stores in the Phoenix Valley. We've got a store in Old Town Scottsdale. They were kind of Bill and Kathy. They were kind of the pioneers, so to say, in our valley. Without seeing them be a successful store, I don't know if I, you know, truly would have opened, because it's nice to see somebody in your, so to say, neck of the woods.
Somebody's got to blaze a path that you can follow here. Yeah.
Totally. Seeing them be a successful dealer. And honestly, like you're probably hearing from a lot of the other dealers, I stopped into a lot of bike shops and just realized a lot of bike shops were doing things wrong.
That's what we're hearing. That's what surprised me again. So I would have thought, as an outsider, I came outside this industry, I run this radio station, host the show for them. I don't know a lot about e-bikes. I'm learning like everybody else listening here. And I would have assumed, well, this is all bike geeks, bike guys, bike shops that would exactly. jump on this. And instead, they seem to be the last, if they are getting on board, they're the last ones to get on board. They turned their nose up at it at the beginning. They didn't understand it. They didn't see the customer for it.
It's like any sport that you're going to look at and you're introduced something new, like bikes, people are hanging on to old traditions and the way they used to do things. They're not going to let go of that. And unfortunately, bicycle owners have the same mentality with how they run the shops. Back when I first got introduced with Brian, you know, I was lucky enough to be a fly on the wall with his shop for a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, what really, I learned a ton from him as far as how, you know, everything that's kind of happening in the shop and how it flows was very important to kind of see, wow, this is working. Okay, this is working, that type of stuff, kind of moving forward and what I could implement in my own shop.
I'll tell you the two things that I see that continually startle me, and you can comment on these as well. Pedego set out early. They weren't really sure. Even Don admits, I wasn't sure where this was going. I wanted my own store first, proof of concept. Would anybody buy these things? And then when it became clear they would, I guess I got to make these things because they're not being made right. And in the old days, they had, you know, didn't have lithium batteries and I don't know, all the problems that he had to figure out. So eventually it forced him into being a manufacturer too, not just a distributor or a retailer here. And as he did that, suddenly opportunities, dealers, people came to him and said, hey, maybe I could open a shop. So there were a couple of early ones. We've had a couple of those on. Yep. But it was still kind of formulae. What is this shop? And the two things that evolved out of it, I think, are radically different than anything I've seen in the bike industry or the e-bike industry. The first is you got dedicated dealers. That seems crazy. I got to have every bike. I got to have little kids' bikes. I got to have touring bikes. I got to have e-bikes. I got to have everything. You want a bike? I got every kind of bike in the world here. But that also means you don't have much passion. You don't have much knowledge. You're just kind of taking whatever you got and, hey, that one's been sitting around a long time. Let's push that one on the customer here. Or maybe I'm getting a spiff from this manufacturer versus that one or something. It doesn't lead to a customer-centric model. It might seem to because you got everything. But everything doesn't give you necessarily the best quality or service.
Yeah, that's been the best thing with Pedego is diversity of a lineup with bikes.
But you're just selling Pedego. I mean, that's the unique thing about this. It's a commitment you guys make. And then I think it shows a dedication and a passion for the products and a knowledge about the products. And when I walk in, you know, I'm getting somebody that believes in this product, right, wrong, or whatever. They're not just pushing this on me because they got a bunch of them in the back and they're trying to unload them here.
Yeah, it's trust and confidence. I have trust in not only the brand, but the guys at the top, Don, Tom, Cassidy, Wendy. Without having relationships with those people and trusting those people that they know they're going to take the company in the right direction, because we're also putting a lot at stake. It's important.
Several of those you rattled. I mean, Don certainly, who founded the company, had the first store.
Yeah.
Tom and Cassidy, who had were like dealer one and two, however you want to count it or something here, and then came into the company here. You know, these are people that have walked themselves. They didn't just come in with, they're not engineers who came up with a product on paper and then suddenly are trying to sell everybody this thing here. They've developed a system over time. So that was one of the features of it I find amazing. Do you find that attractive?
Absolutely. You know, Brian introduced me to Tom and said, hey, call him, you know, that type of thing. Once we kind of felt like I started doing my own research into the market where I was looking, I relied a lot on Tom and even Cassidy with just, you know, silly questions and, you know, stupid things, and even asking Brian, like, they were in, and I don't know if they can give that. I'm sure they did, you know, Cynthia's doing a great job with now a store opening, but I definitely probably bugged the heck out of them calling them and just asking them silly questions.
Say, come on, really? Yeah, should we really do this? Can we do that?
That's fine. They can ignore me all they want. That's fine.
Other thing that I think was genius that they came up with early, and I don't know that other bike shops do this. Maybe they do, and I think we had somebody on from the Jersey Shore, and there are places that just rent bikes. But this idea of try before you buy, I can't do that with anything else. I can't go try the toaster and take it home. I can't go try the TV and take it home. I can't try a car and take it home. So you're asking me to make a commitment to something, a substantial commitment, but not just in money, but in time. I don't want this to be like the exercise equipment I bought last year that's sitting in the garage this year.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So in my store, I've never liked salespeople. I've never liked the sales approach. I don't like going car salesman. I don't like any of that.
Yeah.
So
the high pressure, hey, don't leave. I will give you a discount right now. 10% off. You do it right now.
Maybe. I don't like the follow-up. So literally in my store, I teach, you know, that I'm sure you've heard, you know, Tom's super big into this, is just educating people about how the bikes function, sharing stories with them. that's what's important. And just getting people to, like you said, test ride. So when I'm training new staff, I go, guys, stop talking. Just get people on the bikes and
just
try them.
Get people
Once they come
on
back,
the
answer
bike.
Some questions, educate them. Just get them on and tell them to go. Keep going.
Before we started this, I said, I got to go ride some of these bikes. And so I went to a place where you an event you're doing and got to ride a bunch of them. Surprised, the event wasn't just passing out brochures. Bikes were there to be tried.
Yep.
So I spent quite some time and tried the full line. And I got to tell you, the bike I looked at, I'm a big guy, I'm going to get a big, giant, monster e-bike with the biggest tires. It's going to go super fast.
Yep.
But I'm also, in my 60s now here, and maybe that's not my priority anymore here. I liked the littler, nimbler bike. And then I saw other people grab it and said, no, this is my bike. I don't know that you can just look at it and decide what bike is yours.
No. And that's super important in our shop once we get into that process of fitting the person and finding the proper bike. We talk about geometry in my shop. We get people to, make sure that they are on the right bike and have them try multiple options so that, like you said, you can distinguish between the Boomerang and the City Commuter and what makes these bikes different and why would I choose this one over that one.
Do you get into, you talk about geometry, we haven't talked about this, but I know that in golf shops, oh my God, they endlessly measure your swing and then what club.
Yeah.
And
I'm a golf nerd. So, I was, even when I was playing, I was studying biomechanics and all type of physics that go into the golf game. I love that stuff. So bikes has been no different. I've just kind of tried to slowly, put my passion more. I love learning. So anything I could learn about that, stuff that I didn't know 6 years ago and learn how this stuff can benefit my shop, I'm all about.
So does it play into the way you sell when I come in? Do you fit one to me? Do you, what are you measuring?
Most of it's
my legs move and stuff here and everything.
Yeah, we've got questions that we're looking and kind of intuitively on how you're responding to those questions. We're going to kind of usually try to put you in one, two, or three bikes, and then we'll have you test ride, listen to you on what you feel comfortable, but then also note certain things. We've got a test ride note at the bottom that my guys will fill out, raise seat, knees, she has knee pain, she has, this. Mm-hmm. So after, for doing this,
he's going big, she's season, short, whatever.
Going our fifth season, if somebody comes in and they tell me they have lower back problem or knee problem, I know what bike will probably fit them based on the 100 previous customers that also had knee pain. Mm-hmm. So it's, you kind of know at this point, it's almost more intuitive to kind of know what bike a customer is going to gravitate towards. Now, obviously, you have guys that I need to have a plastic frame bike. I need that bar on top. So sometimes it's like, hey,
People it's just look and appearance and I got to have the biggest, baddest thing around here or I've got to have the prettiest, girliest thing around here or something, whatever it is. But I think there is more to it than I thought. I thought it was just a bike's a bike and maybe I got to get the right kind of height or something, a certain inch off the ground or whatever. But
we'll play with cranks, we'll play with stems, handlebar changes, seat post changes, just anything customization or different modifications that we can make to make you more comfortable. That's we do that at usually no cost in our shop.
So I'll tell you one other thing you said, and I don't want to give away the secret sauce here, but my father was in charge of dealer relations for Chrysler Corporation. I talked about it in the show before. I grew up in the car business. Don grew up around cars in the car business.
Yep.
So we've had that, commonality here. I grew up in Detroit, suburban Detroit. Everybody's dad was an executive for some car company or the vendors or whatever, because he trained dealers and he trained staff. He did all this stuff, tried to improve dealers. And I said, give me some simple takeaways, A couple of things that stuck with me. And one was, he said, too many salespeople, particularly cars, particularly if they have lots of lines, lots of bikes, they want to show you everything in the store. Yep. And at some point, you confuse a customer, you lose a customer. I have felt that. I don't want to see everything. I want to see the right things. And the magic number is three. You can, good, better, best, beginning, middle, end, high, low, middle.
Yep.
You start showing me beyond three, four, five. So you said right away, I'll show you two or three bikes. I thought, this guy gets it.
Yeah.
I think too many of these people, I've walked into the shops, I got everything.
I know.
And I don't, where do I start? I don't know, here, and pretty soon, 2 hours later, I'm exhausted and I leave. I'm looking for somebody to curate, cut through this, get me on the right bike quickly. Give me a couple of choices, but not an infinite number.
Yeah. I don't like sales, but I definitely study sales.
Because if those three don't work, then you haven't listened. If they really did want the monster bike or the funny bike or the silly bike, then you weren't listening. You gave them the wrong three options. So you should listen, and then you're the expert. Here's my three choices, good, better, best, and why they did it, and try it and experiment. But if we're going on and on and on, you're not very good at your job, and I'm not very good at explaining what I want. Yeah.
That was things that even when I was opening a store, that rocking into bike shops and just kind of playing a secret shopper, like, you know, asking questions, it was kind of funny just seeing some of these guys list off 15 different bikes.
I've been in bike shops and I've told the bad story I had. And it's like, I got everything. And then they immediately think, well, you got to have the monster bike that's $80,000 and rides 800 miles. And I'm like, you're not listening. No. That's not me.
No.
And then if they do, they turn their nose up at you. It's like my impression of going to a Rolls Royce store or something, you know, or a Ferrari store. Well, why are you here? You know, we only sell this, you know. I don't know if they have an accent, but whatever, you know, somehow they have to have an accent in those kind of places. They have to be snobbish. They're very snobbish, or bikes are us. We got everything. Pick it out. Totally. And when you're ready, come on up and I'll ring it up.
It goes with greetings. When I can't, that's one of my biggest pet peeves. When you walk into a bike shop, nobody greets you. I still laugh at it because, like, I might be out of a tube and I need to go to, you know, so-and-so down the road and go. And I walk in, nobody says a word. And I'll just stand there for 30 seconds, 45 seconds, just stand there, just waiting, nothing.
Waiting.
Yeah. So it's things like that that you start to see. Like, we do delivery. We're one of the few shops, in which I found kind of ironic, or I guess weird, that we're one of the few shops that does deliveries for service, for new bikes, anything like that in the valley. So
I'll tell you, particularly in pandemic times, we had a giant dealer on, whose name escapes me, but I think they were something like a Honda deal or something, and I forgot what business show they were on. But they have, like, multiple stores back in New York.
Yeah.
And this was at the height of the pandemic. I said, what are you doing? So we're pivoting. You know, as you see ads and other things, you can buy the car and we'll bring it to you. Or test drive, bring it to you. Or you want it serviced, leave the keys somewhere and a mailbox, and we'll go pick them up. Someplace secure. Somehow we get the keys and then we take it, and it just reappears the next day and you don't even know that it was gone. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're not making it convenient for your customers in 2021, I don't know what you're doing.
All right.
Yeah.
So, all right. So did this bike help you? Because it wasn't just looking for an opportunity. You were looking to recover. Well, we didn't really pursue that. Talk about, did bikes help you? Any bike, much less this bike, help you rehab from these serious injuries?
It was different for me. When I got on the bike, it was more of a mental sanity. I was I felt like, I don't want to say like in a bad spot, but I was just down in the dumps.
Yeah.
And getting on that bike, like, I still remember when Brian got it, I had a giant cast. I couldn't on my left hand. So literally, I mean, I was pulling the throttle with one hand. I mean, don't recommend any of that for anybody at home, but, you know, I had a pin in my hand and I had a smile on my face. I was lighting up. We took the bikes home that night. I rode it the following morning. Just a blast just to get out. And, you know, I wasn't looking at it for a workout purpose. I like doing, you know, more other things as well, but it's great for that. It was great to see.
It was great to get you out and get you thinking positive and happy thoughts again here. Yeah.
It was huge. You know, just really refreshing. It's been cool to see kind of that connection that I have with some of my customers as well, especially now, like with some of the stuff that people are going on, just like trying to get out of the house and different things that people are dealing with. Yeah. It's really amazing.
Well, and the one word I hear come up every interview, customer, entrepreneur, dealer, manufacturer, is smile. That's not a word I associate with most products.
Right.
Smile.
Yeah.
I might like it. I might enjoy it. It might serve my needs. But smile isn't the one thing I hear about anything.
No. And that was the big difference maker when I'm looking at it in 2016. Like, what direction do I want to go with my life? That was the big factor. Like,
smile was big. Well, I'll tell you another, again, four advice from the old man here. Through him, I got to meet a couple of custom car designers through the years, you know, because he'd bring home some cool cars, experimental cars and stuff like that, as did my friends' fathers and stuff. And one of the things I asked him once, just casually, I said, what makes a good car classic? Why do people react to this car and not that car? And he said, smile. He said the test for him was, as a salesperson, if you could walk away without looking back at it, forget it. Sound like an old man here, but that girl you just met somewhere a million years ago, I'm thinking about in college. Yeah. I think there was some famous line from some movie with Clint Eastwood, and it was like, that's how you tell if the girl likes you, if she walks away and turns around and looks back. The same thing is true with a product like a car or a bike. If the customer walks away with a smile, if they can't resist turning back one more time to look at it, that you've hit a home run then. You got something.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love when people first hop on the bike and they pull the throttle and you always hear the ooh sound. Yeah, every time when they come back.
I think I made the ooh sound once and I went like, ooh, yeah.
Like automatic. It's just like your nervous system taking over.
Yeah.
It's awesome. So, I mean, it really is, I'd say, satisfying and rewarding to kind of see that and hear some of these stories.
All right. So one of the things that you do, because you were a touring golfer, is that you put on a show, take people out on the tour. And more than most, I hear you do events and other crazy stuff like that to get them out, to follow the leader, to get out in the world, to experience it as a pack, not just a personal product here.
Yeah, and that's, like I said, one of the things that I did learn from Brian. When I was in his shop one day, I think it was a Saturday, and we went out and said, oh, we're going to this farmer's market and I'm doing an event here, helping, helping set up that type of thing. And then finished up there like an hour. And he's like, hey, we got to go over one over thing here. And we're going over here. And I didn't realize one of his other employees had another pop-up shop at like a marathon that was going on. So he's literally got an event at a farmer's market, marathon, and then his shop. And it's just like, I'm looking at this and it's just like, this is genius. You're just increasing your percentages and odds of spreading everything. You're just multiplying it by three right there.
And you're turning this in from a personal, which I always thought a bike was, a personal vehicle, me alone out in the world riding a bike because I need the exercise or I want to get out in the world or whatever it is, I want to go down the trails, into a group activity. Yeah. The car companies that have done that have created fanatical followers. I'm thinking of Jeep because I'm a Chrysler man. But those kinds of experiences where it's a communal experience now. It's absolutely a tribe. It's not just, we're going to go do it. We're going to have car rallies. I grew up in the Midwest where guys, cousins and stuff built cars, and there was car clubs and car rallies and car shows and all that. Now it's turned it into something beyond just, hey, I'm on a bike and I'm going to use it to get around or whatever.
Yeah, that's kind of what you're seeing, even with Don introducing the big Pedagogpalooza bus and having all these really cool blows across the country. It's really neat to see. And that's what people are asking for, and that's what they want right now. So it's cool.
Well, all of those three things, a dedicated, committed dealers who believe in a product and support it and stand behind it, and the ability to make money renting them and to, at the same time, let me experience it without the full investment. For a while, for every week, for multiple weeks, just in case I want to really get to know this thing and see, is this lifestyle going to be something I'm going to embrace or whatever? Not just the product, but the idea of riding a bike again here for those of us that haven't ridden in a while, or those of us moving from a traditional bike to an e-bike or whatever it is, to experience it and then to go out and experience it with a group. Oh, you guys, no wonder you're hitting it out of the park. I mean, it all just makes it. Now, in retrospect, I go, why doesn't everybody? Bike world, they're like, look at you, like, what are you doing? Renting and dedicated and group activities. And
I put my store in between the middle of two of the probably biggest stores in a very affluent town like North Scottsdale. Two shops that have been there 16 years, 20 years now. And I'm still amazed that neither one of them do rentals, anything.
Or deliveries or group activities or blah, blah, blah. All that stuff, yeah.
Community outreach and support we've had since opening the shops, unbelievable. Seeing the amount of people that love, like you said, the group rides are really cool. You know, being able to see people interact and have a good time, eat there every Saturday, Sunday, go out for a ride.
I have one, but all my buddies bought Harleys so they can go out and ride them as a pack. Exactly. And we can all feel young again here. We can all feel wild and free and, you know, the wind blowing in our face. Well, you obviously have got it in a big way. You are the future of the e-bike revolution and probably the Pedego brand here. And I just, the more I get to know the community of entrepreneurs and dealers like yourself, the more I'm amazed at what's happening. It really is more than just a company being built here. It really is a movement. That's the way I see it. There's something, jump on board, get part of it here. All right, how if they want to get a bike from you up in this magic mountain, wherever you are here? What's a McDowell Mountain here? How the heck did they find you?
So you can find us at our website, pedagomm.com. All of our info's there, or you're on the northeast corner of Thompson Peak and Frank Lloyd Wright, right next door to AJ's, a sweet grocery store. So
AJ's, everybody knows every AJ's.
Yeah,
of course. Well, and of course you're a millennial, so you can't just say Pedego McDowell Mountain. You got to go Pedego MM. Everybody's got,
exactly.
I'm just PR and everything here. Everybody's all that. All right. Well, good stuff. I'm just fascinated to hear you guys talk about this. You are a whole different breed of cat than we've talked to before. As I said, I didn't know if this was a millennial product or a millennial business. you prove it
crazy.
Can be. Yeah, it really is. All right, thanks so much for joining us here today.
Really appreciate having me, Paul. Thanks.
All right, stick around here, Hank. Well, everybody, here's another reason to tune in to the Pedigo Podcast as we explore the people, the entrepreneurs behind this movement. It really is a movement. And the love stories of everyone apparently riding along. Brought to you by Pedigo Electric Bikes. For more information on how you can join the revolution, just visit pedigo.com. That's P-E-D-E-G-O, pedigo.com. Brought to you by OC Talk Radio, Orange County's only community radio station. Come back, ride along with us.